So now we'll cover objectives of global sourcing. We'll look at the fiat global procurement model. So extreme standardization of models across the globe to facilitate same level of design, contents, quality levels, robustness and compliance with the European regulations. So this is, you know, a very crucial point that having a standardized model across the globe means that you don't need to have separate dies, separate designs, separate specifications across, you know, the different countries where you're selling your model. And this particular model is also followed in many other, you know, multinationals, including the multinational that I work for, where the same product which is manufactured in, let's say, Spain or Germany, or it's manufactured in India or in Indonesia, Thailand, China, the product will be identical, and it is replaceable with product from any of the other locations where it is manufactured. So in terms of performance or in terms of the specifications, you will find that all the products are identical. Clear identification of internal and external supply chain, that is components manufactured in-house and components sourced globally through outsourced manufacturing. So again, the strategy as far as what will be manufactured in-house and what will be outsourced is, you know, decided and implemented uniformly throughout the globe. Ensure stable group of suppliers throughout the globe. So the concept of collaboration and working with suppliers as partner is implemented across the globe. To guarantee cross-plant and cross-market component uniformity and worldwide efficiency in sourcing, worldwide information transparency on prices, quality and service. So you have a uniformity also in terms of prices, in terms of quality and in terms of service, and it makes it very easy because even you know that certain Fiat models which were manufactured in India, even when they stopped manufacturing, you could get the components from other countries where the Fiat continued to sell. So also in terms of the price, quality, price may be varying, you know, because of economic factors, the manufacturing cost, it can be different across different locations. Even multinational like us, you know, we have this policy. We are supplying to certain major customers across the globe. We have very standard kind of pricing, which is, you know, at the group level, we are negotiating and fixing. There will be only minor differences in the prices at different location based on the logistics. But otherwise, the terms and everything will be very uniform. So this is, again, one of the good practices in procurement. Decreased level of vertical integration, simplification of production arrangements, reduction of investments in fixed and non-fixed assets. So, you know, when we are decided to only make certain products in-house, you are not investing in assets, you know, to make a very wide variety of things. In fact, most automobile manufacturers, you know, are focusing mainly on the assembly. So they would like to outsource or, you know, basically buy most of the components which they will only be assembling. Enhance companies' focus on core activities and development of distinctive capabilities. Streamline their purchasing structure and continue to put strong pressure on suppliers to systematically reduce the cost. So the company has focus on only the core competencies or the key competencies, and they will focus only on development of those areas. Take the example, you know, like in case of Fiat, it will be the product design. In case of iPhone, again, it's a product design. The execution is outsourced to third parties, you know. So this is also one of the management principles that you focus on your core competencies and do not try to do too many things which are not part of your core competency. And here, you know, the focus is as far as the outsourced products are concerned, you know, so you put strong pressure on the suppliers to reduce the cost. And that way you contain the cost of your product and ensure profitability of your product or offering to the market. Define a family of new models to facilitate the aggregation of the models and its component requirements. So, you know, even today you see Honda or even some of the other car manufacturers, they have two or three models which will have a large number of components which are exactly identical. Things like the dashboard or the headlights or, you know, things like that. Even you have the Volkswagen and Skoda, you will find that the models share a lot of components which are identical. There are only some visual features which are different, but this is the level of standardization that they have done for aggregation. So all other components, including the engines, the transmission, etc., will be identical. Creation of worldwide supply chain to manufacture in different places of the world. This has also reduced the supplier concentration risk. So rather than making it at one place and shipping the product, you actually have manufacturing locations across the world, and you know, you also spread the vendors, because you know, you are developing suppliers locally to actually reduce supplier concentration where you are putting too many eggs into one basket. Explore and engage into right composition and mix of sourcing and take advantage of the cost differentials. So we already have, elaborated this point. You are very clear about what you're going to source and what you're going to make it in-house. And also you are not allowing for a supplier concentration. You have the right mix. You do not break down your demand into very small requirements. At the same time, you don't aggregate it and put all your eggs in one basket. Establishment of the organizational learning process. So most organizations, you know, they also have an internal academy. That means they have got internal faculties who basically train the people internally on certain key aspects, key learnings, key processes. Even something like the Toyota production system, you know, where there is a system of periodic audits and dissemination of information, you know, in terms of the best practices, etc. Development of a global supply chain flexibility and efficiency using the production capacity and the supplier base available in different countries. So whenever you have any peak in demand, you can always source from another manufacturing site. You can export, you know, the material. And I remember one of the leading Japanese supplier who has a plant in India, when I was visiting the plant, I saw that they were making a very unique model, which you do not see on the Indian roads, which was actually being made for the export market. So when you have the capability, you can actually distribute the load depending upon the occupancy of the facility. And this is possible only if you have the standardization and you have the same specifications across the different locations. Development of a world material flow and world information flow. And this is possible today with ERP, where you have the complete overview in a single ERP system for the entire operations globally. So you know exactly what are the materials at different locations, where the materials are flowing, and likewise the material and the information flow can be tracked for optimal operations of the business. So what are the stages in global procurement cycle? So first is we plan for the procurement. So involves identification of the need for good, what goods we want to procure, services or works. Develop a procurement plan. So it could be a component, can be a raw material, could be a service. So first we need to identify what are the needs that we have. Formulate the budget, because at the beginning, we have to create an outlay of the the budget that we have, the spend that has been authorized. So ensure availability of the funds for the purchase. Requirement specification, provide clear and accurate specification. So if it's components, if it's products, if it's raw material, you require very clear and accurate specifications. Commitments of funds available from the budget. Organize approval of treasury for allocation of funds. So first you prepare the budget. The budget is approved by the top management, and it is then approved by the treasury so that the funds are allocated for the spend. Tender. Ensure the preparation of tender and release of the tender documents. So imagine that this is for a group of products or a particular kind of a product. So a tender is to be floated. So once we have done all the preceding activities, we prepare the tender and we release the tender documents. We may advertise it or, and the tender documents will consist of all the terms and conditions, all the specifications, all the descriptions except any IP related information which may not be shared immediately in the tender process. Contract establishment, evaluate the bids and award of the contract to the eligible supplier. So the next step is, once you have floated the tender, you receive the bids, you shortlist the bids, and finally you award the contract to the most eligible supplier, or the supplier where you see the most benefit to the company or the organization. Contract management. So once the contract is awarded to the eligible supplier, entire activity of receipt of goods, services, inspection, review of quality, review of performance, monitoring, and reporting of the contract execution. So in short, the contract, once it is executed, you actually have to start execution of the process. That means the delivery process against the contract has to initiate. Handover of the contract management. So once the contract management reaches a maturity level, handover of the management to regular operations, periodic review of the supplier performance, and annual supplier evaluation. So once the system is streamlined and it's settled, then the normal levels or the regular operations will kick in. So then thereafter, any purchase order release, etc., will be handled in a very regular manner, and the call-offs will be given by the production department or the planning department, as may be the case. So, and of course, the procurement people will come into the picture only as far as the supplier performance evaluation is to be done, which is done periodically, to basically ensure that the vendor is really performing as per the agreement. So what are the procurement methods you have? So you have the request for quotation. This is a very simple thing where you are buying a simple component or raw material or so. There is a request for quotation where you ask for a quotation from the various suppliers. Public tender process. So this is a little more complex, where you are asking for either sub-assemblies or for a project, etc. So you may actually float a tender where the activities are a little more complex. Tender by pre-qualification. So here it is a tendering process, but it's not open to everyone. You first pre-qualify the suppliers, and only these pre-qualified suppliers will be eligible to participate in the tender. Restricted tender. So if you have some very high secret or very secretive kind of a project, and you don't want the technology to be known to too many people, you have a restricted tender where you will actually send the tender only to certain people who have been pre-qualified, and only they can participate. Procurement only by negotiation. So here you are calling the people for negotiation. Now typically, for very specialized kind of a component or a material where you have only one or two suppliers, you may not actually float a tender or even ask for a quotation or request for a quotation. So in such cases, you basically call them for a negotiation and then you try to negotiate with them across the table. Agreement of standing order. So sometimes it so happens that a supplier gives you a standing offer. He says that, okay, you want this, this is what I can give and this is the offer I give you. There may be certain conditions. The offer may be valid for a certain period or it may be valid for a certain volume that you require. So as long as the offer is valid, you can place an order as per the standing offer. So these are the various procurement methods that you have. So what are the important rules and conditions for the tender process in procurement activity? So document restrictions on the eligibility of parties to bid against the tender issued. So what are the restrictions that you want to put? Restrictions in terms of who can bid, who cannot bid. This has to be set out at the very beginning. It has to be documented. It has to be communicated well. So clearly, I mean, if you are going to, ask for a particular component, let's say we are an automobile manufacturer and there is a component which only can be machined with a CNC machine of a particular type or a particular capacity. So then you say that only those people who have this kind of equipment can only bid for the tender. Or there are a lot of people who will even bid for a tender who do not have their own facility. What they tend to do is they will actually get the material outsourced. That means they will either do a job work somewhere else, they will buy the materials, they will get the job work done, they will do the quality testing and they will supply the material to you as per your requirement. But it could be that one of your conditions could be that you should have your own facilities. So any such restriction which are there, which you want to put, has to be clearly documented. Objective for the tendering process to be defined. So internally also, what is the objective of the tendering process? What are we aiming for? What are we trying to achieve through the tendering process has to be clearly defined for everyone, all stakeholders, to understand what is it that we are trying to achieve. Scope, content, and format required of bids should be formulated. So if there is a particular format that you want the bids in, and you want the scope to be defined and the content and format has to be defined, then this has to be formulated and then circulated to the bidders. Essential requirement of bids or bidders, for instance, any skill or experience, technical requirement which the bidder must have to participate in the tendering process needs to be defined. So we already talked about, you need to have certain kind of equipment or you need to have your own manufacturing, or the example we took of LPG cylinders, that you should have, ITI certified welders or welders having minimum of, let's say, 20 years experience in high pressure equipment or something like that. So any such requirement, these have to be explained very clearly, for the people who are participating in the tender. Desirable requirement of bids or bidders which would be advantageous for the procurement process and the organization. So now let's take the example of the CNC machine. Let us say that if the supplier has a CNC machine, it is advantageous for us because the quality will be more consistent. But there are also methods by which the same component can be made equally well by the conventional machines. So in such a case, if this is a desirable requirement, you could say that CNC machine will be desirable. So it is not necessary. It does not mean that unless you have a CNC machine, you cannot participate. But it says that it is desirable if you have this. That means you will get a preference, all other things being equal, if you have a CNC machine. Defined and documented the criteria against which the bids are to be evaluated. So the criteria against which you are going to evaluate the bids has to be clearly set out. And internally, this has to be very clearly known, what is the kind of weightage which will be given to each of the criteria. There could be number of criteria, could be that all criteria may not be met equally by all the supplier. So even the weightages which will be given to each of the criteria has to be defined. Deadline for submission of the bids and the location for lodging them. So which is the closing date for the bids, beyond which the bids will not be acceptable, that has to be clearly stated. And the closing date and time at which place. So in case the bids have to be submitted at your head office or in your procurement department, these have to be clearly spelt out. Adequate procedure for managing late submission by the bidders. So in case somebody is delayed and the bids are submitted, you know, beyond the submission time, how they will be handled, whether they'll be considered or not, that needs to be clearly spelt out. Defining what can constitute as non-confirming bids and procedures for managing such bids. So you also need to define what criteria will be used to term a bid as non-confirming, and what will be the process for managing. So how will you inform the supplier or the bidder that, you know, his bid is non-confirming and why it is non-confirming? But the criteria have to be clearly spelled out, and this has to be also spelled out in your initial document, so that you are not reinventing new wheels, rules, and at a later date you don't have a conflict with the bidder. Formulating procedures for handling day-to-day contacts, procurement team, managing the bids and the bidder. So generally, after the bids are submitted, you know, people will be eager to know whether they have made the line, made it to the line. So the people with whom the bidders should be in contact, this has to be clearly defined. And also the team which is going to manage evaluate the bids, so they have to be clearly spelled out, who are the people who are going to and who will be communicating with the bidders. Definition of other procedures governing the provision of information to bidders, including any confidentiality arrangements, procedures for variation in bids before execution. So any such procedures, or provisions has to be informed to the bidder beforehand, before the execution. Even any information which has been shared, which is confidential in nature. So this has to be shared before the execution. Developing procedures for maintaining the confidence of bidders that a decision to terminate a process will be taken with due care. So suppose the bidding process did not achieve the desired outcome, or for some reason, you wish to terminate the bidding process because the tender, you no longer wish to go ahead with it, then your system has to be transparent, and there has to be a clear process to communicate this and to terminate the process, so that, you know, the confidence of the bidders is maintained, because it should not affect the credibility of the organization for any future tender or the bidding process. So what are the supplier evaluation criteria? Shipment, delivery, and cost. So shipment, you are talking of a global procurement. Shipments have to happen on time. Deliveries have to come in the right volumes and have to come at the right time. The cost, of course, this is already predetermined. I mean, you know the cost in advance, but how cost effective is a supplier is one of the criteria on which you will evaluate them. On human resources, how many number of employees, what is the organizational structure, what is the kind of training that the people have, and the number of technical staff. So like we saw in case of, you know, the LPG cylinders, what kind of services you are looking from the organization? And if you're looking at, let's say, LPG cylinder, do they have the right kind of people who can, you know, deliver the product, quality products? So all these things could be, I mean, just looking at number of employees, if your procurement is very big, maybe it may be of importance to you to look at what is the strength of an organization. But your offtake, if it is a small percentage of the total organization, that may not be that important. But what may be important may be other aspects, like what is the technical competence of the people, what is the technical staff there, and how educated or how competent are they in delivering, or do they understand your specifications and your requirements. Quality management system. So management committed to commitment to quality. Management commitment to quality can be seen, you know, through the quality management system. So whether you are ISO certified, etc., that will tell you what is the kind of a commitment that the management has. What kind of internal inspection and controls that the organization has. You can also do an audit and see what kind of records they are keeping, and what kind of inspections they are doing. Are they aligned with your specification? Because sometimes you will find that they are doing a certain internal inspection, which may not be relevant to your specification, but something which is relevant is not being done. So you need to also look at what are the gaps in the inspection and the quality control plans. So what is the kind of a quality planning that they have and quality assurance? Because quality is not about screening the bad products, it's to basically ensure that only the right quality products are made, produced and delivered. Manufacturing expertise and capability. So what is the production capacity? Suppose today you are entering into a contract and tomorrow your requirement goes up. Are they capable of supplying and will they keep pace with the increased demand that your organization may require? Maintenance process and upkeep. What is the condition of the equipment? I have seen organizations which have equipment which are 30 and 40 years old, but they are in, you know, prime condition. They are in very good running condition and they deliver very high quality of products. So maintenance and process upkeep is of utmost importance. What is the process capability, you know, in short? What is the lead time management? How quickly the material moves through the production process? Are the processes up to date? Are they using the best of technologies? What is the kind of a storage facility do they have? If your products are temperature sensitive, do they have the right kind of storage conditions? If your products are dangerous, do they have the right kind of safety and storage facilities which will take care of any eventuality? Product research and development. So are they just working on some technology which they have got from the principals, or are they constantly doing any research and development and evolving on the technology? Business specific criteria. So what is the reputation of the supplier overall in the market? What is the location of the supplier? Is he close to the market? Is he in some remote place? Prices offered, you know, are they lucrative or are they overpriced? Patents and product availability. Are they offering us products which are patented? And, you know, are similar products available in the market? Technical capabilities of the supplier. So how capable they are. Are they at par with other people, better than other people, or they are lower than the other market competitors, you know, their competitors. Information technology. So are they connected to the internet across the location? What is the information technological compatibility? That means if your organization wants to connect, IT to IT, where you can exchange information, including any orders, etc., which has to be seamlessly online communicated to the supplier, do they have the facility? Do they have the right kind of you know, IT systems? So this is another criteria. So now we come to the supplier developmental activities. So considerable time and financial investment in suppliers' manufacturing capabilities. This is one of the you know, investments that the buyer organization needs to make. Trainings. You can provide training to the supplier organization to actually make them understand the product that you're making and how their product or service fits into your requirement. Suppliers assessment and incentive program. So you can actually conduct audits, and the assessment results can be shared with the supplier. And you can also have certain incentive program for the supplier that if they meet certain criteria in terms of quality, in terms of timely delivery, then either it could be monetary or it could be in some other form. Direct involvement of the firm, providing incentives and ensuring enforced competition. So direct involvement of the firm, yes, you as a buyer directly gets involved in the operations of the supplier organization. Providing incentive, we already talked about, you know, the based on assessment or actually based on the supplier evaluation or based on the actual performance. So you could be providing certain incentives, and you also at times can you know, bring in a competition to help supplier improve, you know, so that they, you set certain KPIs, and on those KPIs you ask them to compete with the competition against the supplier. Thank you.